I'm Daniel Levine, and this is the Bio Report.
Lipids have long been used as drug delivery vehicles, but Highfield Biopharmaceuticals is repurposing lipids as drugs to fight cancer. The company's technology platform is seeking to change the immunotherapy landscape with new treatments that are better targeted, more potent, and less toxic. We spoke to Don Wyatt, Chief Business Officer for Highfield Biopharmaceuticals, about the tumor microenvironment, Highfield's platform technology, and how it's developing lipid-based medicines to overcome challenges of existing immunotherapies. Don, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's good to meet you.
We're going to talk about immuno-oncology, Highfield, and how the company is developing immune-modulating liposomes and immunoliposomes to target the tumor microenvironment. Let's start with the tumor microenvironment, though. What makes it challenging for the use of immunotherapies today?
Right. So when we talk about immuno-oncology, that's a very big tent. And so when we apply, say, the perspective that you are of what are the challenges, I think that the biggest challenges that we see across the board is threefold. First, we have to get the drug to the tumor. And that can be quite a challenge in of itself when you're trying to avoid getting your active drug elsewhere in the body. So getting it to focus on the tumor. Then once it gets to the tumor, can it spread around? There's a lot of the more advanced immuno-oncology, they call them ADCs, antibody-drug conjugates. One of the challenges with them is what's called the affinity barrier, where they get dropped off, say, by the blood circulatory system, and they just hang around very localized right there and only work in that one spot. And to try to get past that affinity barrier is quite a challenge. The last challenge that's, say, universal is once you get it in the tumor, if you get it spread around, quite often these molecules need to find the right spot. And how do you get them to focus on exactly the right spot? It may be on a cancer cell, maybe on an immune cell. It could be on a completely different cell. And the other universal challenge outside of those three is what we call durability. And that is, so you dose, you overcome these three challenges I mentioned, and then you have an effect. And is it just over a short period of time? And so this actually, the way you can overcome the durability challenge is if you do what's one subset of immuno-oncology, where we're seeking to modify the immune system of your body so that it starts doing the work. And the challenge with trying to achieve durability through that is that you have a delay in the effect. So for that subset of immuno-oncology, they have a particular challenge. And that is, when we go into human trials, we work with patients that are in the worst condition. They've failed all known therapies and their tumors are advancing. For ethical reasons, that's where you start. And when you start in that environment and you're talking about modifying the immune system, a lot of times there isn't a lot of immune system to work with. And then you need time for it to take effect. And you may not have that time. So that's a specific challenge of that subset of immuno-oncology.
How effective have immunotherapies in general been, and how broadly are they able to address the needs of cancer patients today?
So as a large group, immuno-oncology is in a tremendous breakthrough in the treatment of cancer. I recently had a very good friend of mine who had been diagnosed with cancer. And I remember thinking, it's wonderful that we live in the age of immuno-oncology, and in general, it works. So it's as a category, it's absolutely fantastic. How broadly it applies, any given drug, it depends on how it was designed. Some are designed to broadly affect your system, which then can be applied broadly across a number of different types of cancers. Others are designed for very specific effects that may be limited to the types of cancers. The other challenge we have when we talk about the applicability is there seems to be a patient-to-patient differentiation in the response. Some patients respond very strongly. Others may not respond very much at all. And so what we have then is a difficulty in really identifying the patients and which drugs are going to work on which patients. And we're overcoming that. That's something that's getting worked on in intensive efforts. But it highlights, say, the history of our understanding of cancer. How do we classify tumors? Historically, over centuries, we classified them by where they were located. And the reason we did that was the most that we knew, but also because that gave us an insight on what was going to happen next, so that we could know what to anticipate the effect of the tumor is going to be on the body. When you get to immuno-oncology, the location matters for the challenges I already described, such as getting to the tumor and localizing and focusing on the tumor. But the genetics of the cancer you're dealing with now has as much or more importance on how you treat it. So now we're classifying tumors, not just by where they are so that we can track what's going to happen to the patient, but we're actually going to track their genetics so we can be selective in our treatments. And that's one of the great things that comes out of immuno-oncology.
Well, you talked about the challenges of immunotherapies in regards to the tumor microenvironment, but how does your technology address some of those?
Right. So when you're talking about using lipids and the ways that you can design the use of lipids, one of the nice things about a lot of the forms of lipids is that you get what's called passive targeting of the tumor. There is a phenomena whereby if you design it properly, the lipid portion of the drug will stay intact within the circulatory system until it reaches the tumor, because the tumor has fairly leaky blood vessels and it's able to leak out when it gets to the tumor. You can also design your lipid components for a controlled release effect, which could be don't release till you get to the tumor. It could be make sure that you release outside of the tumor cells themselves. It could be wait and don't release until you get inside the tumor cell. And it also can be being able to maintain a level of concentration of release of your drug, so that you have a continuous effect. You can also design these lipid structures so that you can add targeting structures to their surface, so that when they've passively gotten to the tumor, they more actively are able to find the spot they need to be at. They are also able to be designed to be able to be more distributed within the tumor itself to get over that affinity barrier that, say, antibodies and antibody-drug conjugates have. And then probably the most fascinating is that you can actually design them so that they can bring immune cells into contact with the cancer cells. So it overcomes quite a number of the challenges.
Where does Highfield's liposome technology come from? How was it discovered?
So to understand Highfield and how it designs its drugs, its platforms, and its approaches to not just cancer therapy, but also gene therapy, is to understand its founder. The company was founded by Dr. Yuhong Xu. And what's interesting about her is she started out as an electrical engineer. And so she brings everything that she does with an engineer's mind as to how to design according to the environment and how to design according to the key parameters and how to optimize between the parameters themselves. So as an electrical engineer, she'd heard and learned about cell membranes, which are primarily made of lipids. And they are, in fact, the scaffold of our bodies. And so little was understood about how they function. They control how things go in and out of your cells. They even have an impact on what kind of chemistry takes place inside the cell versus outside the cell. And as an engineer, she was utterly fascinated. So she went to the University of California and got a PhD in biophysics. She had the fortune to have as her advisor Dr. Frank Zocca, who is probably the founder of the use of lipid structures to deliver drugs. And so she was able to learn from him what at the time was state of the art of the use of lipids when it comes to drugs. And yet as an engineer, she felt like there's more to it than that. At the time, the technology was at a level of how do we create lipid envelopes? How do we stuff these lipid envelopes with active drugs? How do we make them as big as possible and put as much drug as possible inside them? Because more must be better. And Dr. Hsu's perspective was that it really doesn't take into account what happens after you inject. What's happening inside the body? Are you actually having the effect you're seeking? Can you improve the effect? So she went back to China. She went to Jiao Tong University as a professor in Shanghai for 14 years. And she studied all the different parameters that you could modify as it relates to how it affects what goes on inside the body. And she's done some tremendous work over the past 20 plus years in order to build the pipeline that the company currently has and the platform technologies it's developed to really take the use of lipids to a much more complex and sophisticated level than most people think of when they think of, say, liposomes, which are those lipid envelopes.
You mentioned gene therapies. I think most people, when they think of lipids, they think of them being used as vectors for delivering therapies. iField is using lipids not just as vectors, but as an integral part of the therapies it's developing. They're important for the structure of the therapy and play a role in the activation of them. Can you explain how they work?
Yeah. So there's many different parameters that you would want to look at when you want to say that your lipid is actually an integral component. It's not just delivering drug. One of the tests that I apply to, you know, as a you know, someone familiar with science, but I'm not a PhD, I'm not an MD, I'm not a scientist. But the question I ask is, without the lipid, would the drug work? And if you look at the way that Highfield develops its products, none of the drugs would work if it weren't for the lipid component, even if the lipid component in of itself is not, say, killing cancer cells. So if you go back, say, to the challenges and how is it that that Highfield is addressing this, getting to the tumor and concentrating the tumor. I had mentioned the passive targeting. And so that is a known effect, and the company takes advantage of that. But the company is also able to design its lipid components to encourage the overall complex to spread around the tumor and to get everywhere that it can go. And then the company, on top of that, what they do is add the targeting moieties to the surface that get it to the target cell, whether it be the cancer cell or an immune cell or other cells, to overcome that challenge. And the controlled release effect can actually allow you to do things like immune modification inside the cancer cell, because you can control the concentration of the active drug over a period of time. And then in the end, these all act as platforms. And when we say platforms, what we mean by that is that any particular iteration, say if you look at our pipeline, the specific drugs that we're developing, you can change the components and actually change the drug so it becomes, say, target a different target cancer cell or a location on the cancer cell, to where you can create a series of similar products across the platform that that can build out an entire large drug portfolio. So the lipid component, the way it works is allows you to build a platform technology.
Your pipeline actually represents distinct approaches to immunotherapies. Each approach uses a unique liposome structure targeting different elements of the tumor microenvironment. Can you walk us through these? I want to have you explain what they are, the indication you're targeting, and how they work. Let's start with your most advanced candidate, HF1K16.
Yes, so we call that K16. It's a fascinating little drug. It's probably the simplest from a technology point of view. It's a lipid envelope called a liposome, and within it is a drug called ATRA, all transretinoic acid. ATRA is a known drug. It is currently used for a very rare form of leukemia. And the way it's used is as a pill, and it acts directly on the leukemia cells, which is very different than what Highfield is doing. Highfield is putting high concentrations of the drug in lipid envelopes for controlled release. And the reason is because regardless of how many of those pills that you take, you will not get the effect that Highfield is seeking. So the way the drug operates in the body is that it is injected. It does the passive targeting to concentrate at the tumor site. And then the slow release effect causes a long-term durable kind of release of the drug within the tumor, because the goal is to modify the immune system within the tumor. And to explain the modification, let me go back to say, let's say that you got an infection, bacteriovirus infection, and how your body responds. Your immune system is going to ramp up active immune cells to attack the invader. But the other thing that your immune system is going to do is it's going to release suppressor cells. And these suppressor cells are going to circulate with the active cells, and it kind of keeps a check on your system. Because the truth is, if your immune system overreacts, it's more dangerous than the infection you have. So you get this suppressive effect of these cells that are released. And the fascinating thing is that if your infection continues, these suppressor cells can convert into active immune cells. So these suppressor cells are called MDSCs, and they will convert into active immune cells. So not only do they stop suppressing, but they start getting into the game. And what we find is that in a number of tumors, a lot of cancers, there's an accumulation of these MDSCs at the tumor site. And so Highfield's proposal is that it is these suppressor cells that are part of the problem as to why your immune system is not doing a good job of clearing out the tumor. So what the company is doing is using the passive targeting of lipid structures to get the ATRA to the tumor site to release it in a high enough concentration so that these MDSCs convert into active immune cells. And that's how the drug works.
And what's known about it from studies that have been conducted to date?
So we've gotten into the first level of human studies. And this is, as I had mentioned earlier, this is an immune system modifying drug. So I had mentioned earlier that you need to have, say, healthier patients, more newly diagnosed patients that have healthier immune systems, and patients that have the time for the immune effect to really solidly take place. However, we have in our initial safety studies, which are with the sicker of the group of cancer patients. These are patients who have failed all known existing therapies and their tumor is progressing. And we have dosed them, and we have found that even with a single dosing, we are able to detect a reduction in the MDSCs and an increase in active immune cells, even in patients that tested zero active immune cells when they came into the study. So we are at this point showing that the mechanism that we're seeking works. Now, as to the effect, are we getting the effect we're looking for? As I mentioned, it's hard to see an effect with this kind of a drug in patients in this stage. However, we've gotten to the point where we're seeing tumors stopping their growth at about 30%, which is meaningful at this stage of their progression in their cancer. It's very meaningful. We did have one patient, a brain tumor patient, that at the lowest level of the dose, over a period of a year, she was cured. And the cancer has been gone now for 2 years since she started therapy. That's a very interesting data point, but we should see that as a data point. People that know more than I do about drug development will tell you that that can happen in these initial studies. And it doesn't necessarily mean what's going to happen in later studies. But it is a very interesting data point, and we're excited about it.
And what's the development path forward?
So at this point, we've established safety, and we've established that we believe that we're seeing the beginning of a signal that when you do what we're doing, it will have an effect on quite a number of tumors. So the next stage is to get the regulatory approval to go alongside of existing therapies in healthier patients. And we're very encouraged by the opportunity to do that, because one of the great things about this drug is that its toxicity, its negative effects are near zero. We've had no serious adverse effects. That's the term, serious adverse effects, that would necessarily lead you to believe that this is going to be, you know, dangerous in any way. Keep in mind that Atra is actually a derivative of vitamin A. So it is a highly safe drug, which means that it should be able to be put aside just about any existing therapy, as well as in any patient at their progression of their cancer. So there's a great opportunity now to put it side by side with existing therapy and show an improved outcome relative to that therapy alone.
You have another experimental therapy in development. This is a drug-encapsulated immunoliposome containing doxorubicin. Tell us about that. What is it? What's the indication you're pursuing, and how does it work?
Yeah, so this drug is directed to solid tumors, and it's really a fascinating drug in that you have that lipid envelope I mentioned earlier, and within it you have what's a poison for the cancer cells. Now, that in alone already exists out in the world. It is one of the primary drugs used for treating cancer. It has that nice passive targeting feature where it will generally accumulate at the tumor. Interestingly enough, that alone has been shown over the years to not necessarily be more effective than if you just dose the drug without the envelope. So from a side effect point of view, there's a positive, you know, getting it concentrated to the tumor, but we're not seeing a cell killing effect. And so what Highfield believes is that is because it is still in the form of what we call the older way of using lipids. It's as big as you can get it, packed as full as you can get it. And that doesn't necessarily have the biological effects that you're looking for. So what Highfield did was they, as a company, they said, well, first we're going to put targeting structures on the surface of this envelope. And these targeting structures are going to go after parts of the tumor, going after tumor cells specifically. So what's nice about tumor cells is a lot of them tend to have on their surface a high population of structures that you don't see as much elsewhere in your body. You still have them elsewhere in your body, but not as much, which means that you can target them and have a more likelihood of hitting the cancer cell than a healthy cell. And so what the lipid envelope has on its surface is these targeting structures going after those portions of cancer cells. So after you get the passive targeting into the tumor, the concentration in the tumor, you have the lipid structure allows it to mix around in the system. And then you have that active targeting on the surface that directs it into the cancer cell. Another feature of the drug is that instead of making these envelopes as big as possible with as much drug as possible, they're made to be just the right size to be pulled into this cancer cell after they attach to the surface with just enough drug just to kill that cancer cell, so that you get more. When they're smaller and they're just the right size, you get more to hit more cancer cells. If you have larger structures, then if they get pulled into the cancer cell, you have fewer of them hitting fewer cancer cells. So with this system, you have more of the envelopes, you have them passively targeted to the tumor, and then actively targeted to the cancer cell.
This is in early clinical trials, but is anything known about its safety and efficacy from studies done to date?
Yeah, so from an efficacy point of view, time will still have to tell. We've just started the human trials, and we have gotten to the point where it's starting to be shown to be safe at the levels that we expect that it's going to be therapeutic. Now, what is probably the most interesting known about this drug to date is actually in the animal models, because it's true that you would expect this drug to be effective against tumors that tend to show the structures I mentioned that are more populous on the surface of cancer cells than they are on healthy cells. But interesting thing about the animal models is that this drug was effective against those cancer cells that have a lot of those structures on their surface, that have fewer of those structures, and then, interestingly enough, those that have so few that they used to be designated as negative, that they didn't express and have on their surface those structures. Those types of tumor cells that tend to be mixed in with at all tumors are called triple negative, because they're very, very tough to hit. They don't have on their surface the three primary structures that we look for in order to target a tumor cell. And the ability to hit triple negative tumors would be quite novel, and as well as not having any additional toxicity to the other healthy cells in your body relative to that you would expect with one that didn't hit triple negative tumors. So the animal models are leading us to an exciting potential for what we might see in the clinic.
The last candidate I wanted to ask you about is your preclinical candidate, HF50. What is it and how does that work?
So HF50, every time I think about it, I smile, because it really, truly does have an engineer's mind behind it. So what Highfield has done is taken a lipid envelope and put on the surface these targeting structures I mentioned. So this lipid envelope will preferentially passively target into the tumor, preferentially congregate into the tumor and spread around, and then it will preferentially attach to an immune cell. Because the targeting moiety is directed first, you have one set of targeting moieties directed to immune cells, and it'll attach to the immune cell and stay on the surface. And then the second structure, targeting structure, is directed to cancer cells. So the net effect is to bring the tumor cell to the cancer cell, to introduce them to each other. Now, the idea is that if you introduce them, then the immune cell will start to do its job and get to work. Interestingly enough, doing that alone doesn't seem to have very much of an effect. However, because this is a lipid envelope, you have the opportunity to put something inside it. And so what Highfield did was they put an immune stimulatory drug inside the lipid envelope, so that it stimulates the immune cell in addition to bringing it into contact with the cancer cell. And that's in the animal models where you start to see a significant effect and shrinkage of tumors. And so we're hoping to start human trials, safety trials, later this year or the beginning of next year.
And can you talk a bit about the business model. Highfield's based in China. How does Highfield in China and Highfield in the United States interact? Is research in China and development in the U.S.? Is the focus on developing therapies for both the U.S. and China?
So it is a China-based company. And as a China-based company, it operates from China. What being a drug development, nearly every drug development company that you'll look at uses contract research in order to do a lot of the high-end work in the lab or in the in the clinic with human patients. So what you'll get is a lot of contractors is the way that you manage these things. The company gets U.S. approvals for human trials. In fact, for the K1 molecule that we talked about before, that is in fact a study that's started in the U.S. and is ongoing in the U.S. When it comes to the K16 molecule, it started in the U.S. And then transitioned to China. And HF50 will probably start in China and then transition to the U.S. Each of the locations, whether it's the U.S., Europe, or China, has their own advantages relative to availability of patients and cost and the ability to get to where you need to get to in a timely manner. And so Highfield takes advantage of all those differential opportunities and develops basically globally while it's in China.
And how's the company funded to date?
So the company is funded by Chinese investors who are generally pretty enthusiastic. This is a tremendous innovation company for China. And so it's a good opportunity for China and Chinese investors to get involved in innovative companies that are there local in China. And like any drug development company, always raising money, because we're not at the subsistence level of money raising. We're at the more money you have, the more you can do. And our teams have not been too stressed yet. They still have more capacity for growth in both expanding our clinical trials, but also expanding our portfolio. One of the things that we have not discussed is our gene therapy programs, because they're not in oncology, they're outside of oncology. That's a whole nother arm of the company that the more money we're able to raise, the more broadly we can approach innovative use of lipids in order to enhance therapies.
And how far will existing cash take you, and what's the plan for raising additional capital?
Well, we're always in constant raising of capital, like most drug development companies. We're certainly funded for the next few years. The question, I think, is not necessarily whether we're funded, but how much are we able to get done in a relatively short time period? We are, you know, it's time and money is the constant tug of war for drug development companies. And the more money, the less time you need. The more time you need, the more money you need. So in our struggle, it's more how broadly can we expand our portfolio, or should we focus on, say, the top three that we currently are over the next few years?
Don Wyatt, Chief Business Officer for Highfield Biopharmaceuticals. Don, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening. The Bio Report is a production of the Levine Media Group. To automatically download this podcast each week, subscribe to our RSS feed or through iTunes or other podcast manager. To join our mailing list, go to levinemediagroup.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line or are interested in sponsoring this podcast, send email to danny@levinemediagroup.com. Special thanks to Jonah Levine, who composed our theme music, and the Jonah Levine Collective, which performs it.